I'm not here to endorse violence, but I am here to sell for the rest of my life that sometimes an ass kicking keeps you honest. And those two guys needed a little honesty presented to them. Nick McKellar found some honesty and gave it to them.
There's also a Funko, like a pop art vinyl doll that's been made of him.
Yes, it's he's an action figure now.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the cherry on top of this too. By the way, just so you know, that this is as endorsed a beaten as you can find fan on fan violence in the NBA. Zero police involvement. Police did respond, assessed the scene, heard what happened, saw an entire section of Nuggets fans saying the Suns guy did nothing wrong, and said, okay, the people have spoken.
Yeah. I mean, I find the result of this more objectionable only because you'd have liked to have seen security come in earlier and take those two fans out before it got to that.
Agreed.
That said, McKellar is the victim here because
he's also
he's the one that they instigated. He's the one who got instigated upon.
Totally.
And at some point, when somebody's going to hit you from behind, you're sort of out of options at that point.
Damn right.
I mean, if he had picked the fight, I'd say lock him up.
Totally.
But he's the guy who caught the first pop and then caught a second one.
Suns in four, baby.
Suns in four.
Suns in four. That's a good reason to not have a game seven, just for that moment, so Nick can have his prediction being right.
I still get screwed out of three games, and I didn't throw beer on him.
Yeah,
the hell with him.
But, Ray, if we're honest, not three very good games.
I don't care. Three games you get to watch is better than no games you get to watch.
I guess.
I'm going to switch topics for a brief moment.
Yes.
Dominique Ducharme, who is the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens, has tested positive for COVID and will be sidelined for at least 10 games.
Well,
10 days.
Hello.
They play game three tonight in Montreal.
So what do they just?
They get a second. They get one of the assistants runs the team.
There you go.
Got a sort of a Mike Brown, Luke Walton situation going on there.
Well, if there's one thing the NHL has told us over and over again is that no coaches matter. They can all be fired and replaced instantly.
No,
with
that's
the next
what the NBA's
dude
told us this
Boney.
Year.
Well, the
NBA's cleaning out people like crazy.
This year, sure, but the NHL's been on that for a long time.
Oh, yeah, no, NHL coaches have a shorter shelf life than NBA coaches, but not as short a shelf life as soccer coaches.
Well, and probably not as short a shelf life as Nate Bjorkman, am I right?
But I'm bump.
Well,
no, you are right.
In fairness, people knew he was getting fired after 30 games.
That's true.
When the entire locker room they're turning him off. He's having pregame talks, and there are players with headsets on. Sorry. Whatever it is you've got, I ain't buying.
Not listening. By the way, Anthony.
It's amazing they even got to the play-in games with
that. It is.
Coach of the year. Anthony in Concord, as Matt told you earlier, is billing himself as someone with some dog experience. Fantastic. Anthony in Concord, tell us about your experience with animals. Do you think that they understand that they have won a competition when they're in said competition?
Absolutely. Thanks, Damon. And a longtime listener, first-time caller. Ray, animals' drive to be successful is not anthropomorphizing them. So when you think about their drive to do it, whether that's running, finding something, search and rescue, that's just humans kind of co-opting that behavior loop, you know? So to the point about winning a race or finding a person in rubble, that's instinctual. And we just kind of use that to help us out day to day. Other than that, traffic report, 680 North is the parking lot. And I'll send it back to you guys.
Thank you very much, Anthony. That was an incredible update.
Fantastic.
Anthony, you are, from now on, whenever we have a dog or a highway issue, I want you on the phone as quickly as possible. That is your new behavioral loop that I would like you to enter.
That was excellent.
Traffic and veterinary services on the 8th.
That's really
science.
It's totally science.
Behavioral loop, man. You know what I mean? Was definitely the highlight of the show so far.
The behavioral loop. No one saw that coming.
No.
That is so you know how basically all sports on Twitter are basically an amalgamation of a clever phrase you heard someone smarter than you use, so then you turn around and use it.
Yeah.
Let's just jog back to, I don't know, 13 years ago. It was, Wildcats and zone blitzes. We talk about football
Tampa 2.
My entire life without Wildcats or zone blitzes or the Tampa 2.
And RPOs.
It was all anyone could talk about. All anybody could talk about, the damn zone blitz. Let me tell you about this zone blitz. You know what? In basketball, you're going to want to switch that. Switch it. You know what? You should just switch it. Switch. Close the loop. Next time you are talking about the dogs or any animal behavior, you got to get into that behavioral, instinctual loop.
Yeah.
That was a great phrase.
That's a man with some experience with dogs.
He did have experience with dogs.
Absolutely.
He wasn't lying. Who had a better...
Very skeptical.
Who had
I'm very skeptical.
Better call, that guy or David Locke?
touch and go, man.
Let's be honest.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
We heard every word that guy said.
That's right.
I got to give him that credit. Right. Much credit.
David might have said some brilliant things. We just missed a third of it.
Wiseman would have given him an A.
That would have been good. Wiseman... Definitely.
Thank you. I'll be here for the rest of the show.
Anyway, we get a Game 7 in Brooklyn. We're going to get that on Saturday, 5:30 TNT. It is a monster between the Bucks. And, of course, we've got the Milwaukee Bucks hopefully figure out what they did last night, bottle it, and drink it before Game 7 so they can do it again. Tonight, we got the Sixers and the Jazz playing for their lives. The Hawks and Clippers are at home. Both can close out the series. Sunday might have one, two, or no game sevens for us to enjoy. I do hope we get two. Sure. Absolutely. Three game sevens over the weekend would be fantastic. They will be easy to find on your TV, and maybe the San Francisco Giants won't be. I know a lot of people are upset that the Peacock Network has hijacked the Giants TV feed for the weekend. I think, you know, honestly, in the Bay Area, you have less of a right to be upset about this than any other market. I mean, we invented the internet. You can't be upset at the internet in the Bay Area.
Point of contention. Al Gore invented the internet.
True.
But the thing is, it's not the internet. Ray's right. And it's not a network either. It's an app.
It's adapting to new technology is what I'm basically saying. We adapt. Download the Odyssey app. Let me tell you.
You can
go to Silverado. You can stay there. You get a food
and
voucher.
And I think you're right to an extent. But here's what I think is fascinating about this. Because this weekend it's free on the Peacock app. But I do think this is a preview of a sports future where things are not free on whatever app they happen to end up on. Because, for instance, right now, if an American soccer fan wants to watch Premier League, they have to pay for Peacock Premium. And at what point does baseball or someone else, one of our major sports, say, you know, we could actually make more money if we make them buy this app and pay for a subscription?
No, that's exactly what this is. People are upset because they already pay for NBC Sports Bay Area. Now they're trying to be shoved, you know, NBC is trying to move them over to Peacock. Because I think the regionals are about to get shuttered.
They probably are. This is probably a canary in the cage sign of things to come. I know this, that the vast majority of people in the Bay Area, I bet you already have Amazon Prime.
Sure.
And because of that, when NFL games get moved over to Amazon Prime, I don't hear the hoi polloi get all up in arms about anything because you have it. The whole point is it's another damn button they're asking you to download.
That's what
nobody wants to do that. I understand the way the future's going. I'm not here to be some anti-futurist, even though I'm the idiot still on the radio, which kind of proves that. But there's also what I don't like about this more than anything else, because I agree. This is the way we're going. This is the birds are flapping wings like this now, so you better get used to it. What I don't like about this is that they're doing it on Father's Day weekend. That's what I don't like about this, because there are going to be a whole bunch of living rooms on Sunday afternoon.
Confused.
Filled with, exactly, confused fathers, confused grandfathers and uncles who don't know where the game is, what a Peacock was, or the app is.
I just want to watch the game.
Yeah, to do it this weekend feels like that's obviously you're trying to capture – a trapped audience.
It's profound manipulation, but that is the American way.
Yeah, that's the one thing I don't like.
And bait equals switch.
Yeah, and you know, believe me, in order to get the free version of the Peacock app,
And again, this is, it's not Peacock. It's any app. This is how it's all going to go. But in order to get the free version of the app, you're giving them the email that they're then going to harangue you at to pay for the paid version of the app. I mean, that's the game.
Yeah, you're in the loop now.
I got a behavioral loop?
It's a behavioral loop.
Is it a behavioral loop? That's the question. So we've got, coming up next, Joe DiCamera, WIP radio host. Phillies in town, obviously. The Sixers playing for their lives. It feels like a good time to talk to somebody who understands cheesesteaks implicitly. That's why Joe DiCamera is going to be joining us coming up here, and we're going to give you a chance to win $1,000 as soon as we come on back from break here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, before we get to our next guest, let's sprinkle a little cash around. Chance to win $1,000. Text the code word ROCK to 72881. ROCK 72881. Brought to you by your local Toyota dealers. Let's go places. A multi-state contest with message and data rates applying tonight. A couple of big games, really big games. Both the Hawks and the Clippers are at home, and both can close out the series. The 76ers have just been afraid to shoot the ball, afraid to have anybody but a couple of guys make plays in second halves and fourth quarters, and it could be another extraordinary collapse for a Doc Rivers team that we all agree looks pretty damn good and ready to win, but for whatever reason, they are not. To talk about that and the fact that the Phillies are in town to take on the Giants tonight, Joe DiCamera, WIP Radio in Philadelphia, nice enough to join us on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Joe, thanks so much for your time this afternoon. How you doing?
Hey, Damon, I'm good. And I'll tell you, ironic you bring me on with that code word of ROCK, because I think that's what Ben Simmons is afraid of, holding the ball.
He is.
He is a real problem, and it is the biggest reason why the Sixers are trailing in the series right now.
So as you look at that, just that last game was basically every anxiety that any Philly sports talk fan ever called your show with coming to real life, wasn't it? It felt like the entire meltdown of what could the worst case scenario of the process give you look like? Yeah. Well, there it was.
Well, 100%. And, you know, we've seen this stuff coming. And, you know, everyone's known here in Philadelphia that the Sixers, and across the nation, the Sixers have a very good team and certainly have a chance to win the title. But, you know, Ben Simmons' lack of shooting, lack of willingness to shoot, lack of willingness to try to shoot, and lack of ability to shoot all could just cripple the Sixers' chances at some point. And it's affected them in past postseasons, and here they are again. And, you know, this is the fourth year the Sixers have a good team in the playoffs. They still haven't beaten anyone of any merit in the playoffs. They've beaten these lower-seeded Eastern Conference teams that are very average in the last couple of years, including the Wizards, you know, 2 weeks ago. And when they actually face a team that actually can, you know, pack a little bit of a punch, and it's not like the Hawks even pack that big a punch, you know, they run into resistance. And Ben Simmons doesn't have, whether it's the capability or the willingness to make the adjustments, to prepare for the moment, and it's biting the Sixers. And it's not just him. Tobias Harris has been soft in this series. And Joel Embiid, who obviously is the best player on the team, and I think clearly the best player in the series, you know, his injury and his stamina issues also come into play when he's got to play every game during the playoffs and try to go, you know, as great players try to go 35, 36, 37 minutes. So, yeah, it's a culmination of a lot of things, and the Sixers are definitely in some trouble.
Is the mood in the town finally settled on a note? Because it's always been an argument about, you know, is Simmons, you know, the key to their future or not? Has this series changed that, or is there still sort of an argument about how important he is?
Well, so it's an interesting way you phrase that. He's incredibly – everyone knows he's incredibly important because he can be the difference in them literally winning a championship or not. But to your first – the way you first phrased that, I think people are coming around to the fact that he will probably be what prevents them from winning the championship. You know, we did a poll yesterday during our show – you know, do the Sixers need to trade Ben after this season, keep Ben, or you're not sure yet? And you're not sure yet was only 12%. 80% of respondents said, he's got to go. And there was only 8% of people that said, no, they got to keep him. So now listen, that's very reactionary from game five, which was an all-time meltdown and probably the lowest point for a 76ers fan in many, many years. since they've been trying to win. But, you know, the aggravation the town has with Ben Simmons right now is at an all-time high, and the town had already been really aggravated with him. He just is unwilling to try to shoot. And, you know, it's one of those things where it is probably mental, but it's not exclusively mental. I mean, there's a lot of us here. If you guys watched, when you watched the game tonight, look at the way he holds the basketball. A lot of us are convinced, and I'm one of them, that he actually shoots with the wrong hand. I mean, if you watch him do other things in life, he does it right-handed, and he gets. I mean, it's just the whole thing. He's got this right-hand, left-hand thing. He's kind of ambidextrous, but a lot of us think he shoots with the wrong hand, and he's got horrible form. The elbow's in the wrong spot. It's just unbelievable, and it's so incredible to have such an amazing player like Joel Embiid and such an otherwise skilled player like Ben Simmons, and to have the main reason why the team will probably not go as far as they could and might not win a championship is literally because this guy is either unable to shoot or unwilling to have the guts to shoot. I can honestly say I've never seen anything like it in my entire life as a sports fan, as an NBA player unwilling to attempt to shoot. And what is so aggravating for so many here is he's had 5 years with the Sixers to try to work on this. So this isn't like this is new. And what is really aggravating also, now I'm kind of getting revved up here, but what is really aggravating is that Doc Rivers, who's, you know, he's an adult in the NBA. He's a guy that's won a lot and experienced a lot as a player and a coach, and he should know better. And the bottom line is he didn't push him hard enough. He should have told Ben Simmons in a game in February against a bad team like Cleveland, hey, Ben, here's the deal. You're either going to shoot 12 times tonight from the outside, or I'm going to put you on the bench because I'm going to make you do what's uncomfortable for you. If you go 0 for 12, then you go 0 for 12. But it's a learning experience. We're going to beat Cleveland any which way we cut it, but I'm going to force you to try. And Doc never forced him to try. They've been acquiescing to Ben for years. And so here you are at a moment when you are literally 1 month away from having the chance to win a championship, and he's ill-equipped for the moment, and that drives the city of Philadelphia nuts.
So let's say the franchise comes around to what, just guessing from your last answer, is your view, along with the 80-something percent of respondents, yeah, and says, yeah, we got to move this guy. For what? What can you get for him at this point?
So, tremendous question. And we spent a lot of time talking about that. And what, you know, we're coming around to is the realization that it's going to be a lot less than we used to think. I mean, I remember, just as a for instance, going back, you know, let's say you go back 4 years ago when Ben was, you know, coming out of college, first year, whatever it might be. And it's like, I'll admit this. I was of the mindset, like, I would not trade Ben Simmons for Damian Lillard. This was me 4 years ago. Mm. And my justification was because I believe Ben Simmons is going to become a top seven player in the NBA, maybe a top three player, and he can do it for 13 years. So why would I trade him for Damian Lillard, who's a top 12 player, but older? And stuff like that's a pipe dream now. I mean, you know, would I trade Ben for Bradley Beal? Sure, but the Wizards would. You know, I mean, we could go through five different, you know, the night of the draft when Luka was taken, whatever pick he was, third or fourth, whatever the heck that was, you know, a couple years ago. Like, would you trade Ben Simmons for the fourth pick in the draft? Probably not. But then when you find out who that player becomes, it's like, oh, well, that guy's better than Ben. I think it's come down so much now. Instead of Damian Lillard, it could be C.J. McCollum. You know, it could be Malcolm Brogdon. And that's where Sixers fans are like, whoa, hold on a second here. Now you're telling me this championship path that hey, we thought we were on, and it's like, well, not as much. So it's a real shot for Philadelphia sports fans right now to experience this. And to your initial point, guys, it is sort of like the process realized worst case scenario of, you know, possibly falling short.
Joe DiCamera, WIP Radio in Philadelphia here on 95.7 The Game. And if you think you're frustrated now, let Jalen Hurts get injured and the season is in Nick Mullins' hands. You're going to love that. Let me just tell you, hopefully that doesn't happen for you. We've got the Phillies in town, okay? And, you know, I know that the reasonable Phillies fans out there loved Gabe Kapler. They might have hated Gabe based on just, what, that first series alone against Atlanta where he burned through the entire franchise's pitching staff in two games. I know there was really no coming back from that moment for him. Are you looking at Gabe a little bit differently now that he's really run into patches of success with the Giants that we weren't even expecting?
Yeah, well, so a couple things. I personally am not, because I was never as down on Gabe Kapler as most people in Philly. I did think he had to go in the end, just from a business standpoint, because the town had turned on him so dramatically that I think from a business standpoint, the Phillies really needed to get a new manager in there because the town was tuned out. So that's a problem. But to your point, and I'm with it with where you're leading me there, and I said this today on my show, you know, and we didn't talk a ton of Phillies today because it's game six, but I said, like, to everyone listening, I'm like, listen, a lot of you guys were wrong. You might not admit it. You might not want to admit it, but you were wrong. And, you know, the reality is a lot of people, there was two basic things that happened with Kapler. The first is, as you alluded to, the bad start he got off to. And so people thought that these in-game managerial decisions he made in the first week defined him as a bad game day manager, which I just thought fundamentally was totally inaccurate. The second thing that happened, and it happened repeatedly, and this is what then became the bigger problem, just how he talks. And post-game, after a lot of losses, just a lot of nonsense, he's covering up for his players, and that just doesn't work in Philly. And you can get away with it to an extent, and Andy Reid ran into some problems with it, but Andy Reid at least won a lot of games. Didn't win a title, but won a lot of games. Gabe Kapler had 500 teams, and Philadelphia doesn't want to hear that nonsense when you go 80 and 82. So, you know, I think a lot of people in Philly might not admit it, but deep down know, maybe I did look at Kapler wrong. And he also didn't have great teams here. He really didn't. He had very average talent, and obviously he's got better talent in San Fran, but he's doing an exceptional job out there.
Joe, thank you very, very much. No matter what happens, you're going to have a great show on Monday. There's absolutely no doubt about that, man. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it. Go and enjoy the weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great weekend yourselves. Take care.
Thank you, Joe. DeCamera, WIP Radio in Philadelphia. Little remorse on Kapler. I like to hear somebody actually reach that conclusion. The insistence that we were right and he must have gotten magically better is how a lot of people would want to sell that. Yeah, maybe they did get that wrong. Or maybe it is Farhan's magic wand waving over everything that has really changed things. But there is definitely a level of trust between Kapler and Farhan that exists in San Francisco that did not exist for him in Philadelphia.
Or maybe he just grew as a manager. Maybe, and the criticism of him early on was that he basically ran a metric game.
And he didn't feel a game.
Well, it wasn't a question of feeling the game. He didn't feel his players. And his players resented it. And maybe here in a new place, he learned from the mistakes that got him fired. So maybe this isn't Farhan. Maybe this isn't so much the players. Maybe he just grew. Maybe that time out of the managerial loop made him smarter.
I don't think there's any doubt that he's grown as a manager. But I want to make sure it doesn't sound like I'm saying nothing has changed. However, this man went to a team whose previous five seasons, had 73, 73, 63, 71, and 66 wins, and he basically managed them to a 500 record over two seasons. I think he was probably pretty decent then, and that it was a pretty bad baseball team, you know? And I don't think there's any question he's gotten better. I think he's gotten better even just looking at him this year versus last year.
He is so right, though, that Joe is, that in Philadelphia, if they don't like the way you're talking at the end of games, that is a demerit against you. When Chip Kelly landed with the Eagles, for a minute it was actually working. Then he started bringing up the concept of, well, I'm going to have our guys drink protein shakes. Protein shakes in the Bay Area is an easy sell. People
yeah, it was
drink
more
all
like
sorts
a smoothie,
of things.
Right?
It was a smoothie.
Yeah.
And a smoothie in the Bay Area sounds like a great idea. In Philadelphia, it sounds like an attack on your personal liberties to be a fat ass.
But there was also a political thing that Kelly didn't understand.
With Howie Roseman.
With Howie Roseman, the general manager. And
it wasn't just the shakes.
Yeah. No, but the point is, you know, Jeff Lurie gets a pass in that town that almost nobody else gets. And when Lurie sided with Roseman, the tone of everything turned.
Hmm.
And Kelly went from, well, that might be an interesting theory, to you're
get
a vile human being.
Here.
And it turned like that.
Yeah. Philly is known for turning like that, so not a big surprise. But I do think that, you know, to Joe's point, the
what do you sound like as a human being is a bigger part of it. Because as he said it, at a certain point, if the town turns on you enough, like, unless you really are an exceptional manager who's winning everything and the town has for some reason turned on you, it doesn't add up business-wise to keep you there.
Right. No, and nobody likes a detailed, complex answer when all they hear is you lost again.
That's right. But, yeah, and I think that's true of both Kapler and Kelly, that like they lost for Kapler not all that much, but enough, and they had a lot to say and a lot of stuff that I know just listening to Gabe Kapler now, like I think his particular brand of somewhat cerebral, thoughtful commentary plays great here.
Yeah, much better. It definitely lands better.
Yeah.
Because our hoi polloi reads more books. Let's be honest.
Yeah, that could be it.
We were having a great conversation yesterday with Alex Pavlovich about how this has come together so well for Kapler. And he said, it really isn't just like a cult of Kapler's personality. What he's great at is spreading the wealth around and sharing the credit with the biggest, most robust coaching staff in all Major League Baseball.
He hired this coaching staff that nobody knew about, and people thought it was kind of crazy to have 13 coaches at the time. They're up to 14 now, and a bunch of young people, a bunch of people who came out of nowhere. And the one thing we have heard consistently for 2 years now, whether they've been playing good baseball or bad baseball, is just players, and even players like Buster Posey, Brandon Crawford, who have been around a long time, crediting the coaching staff. So I do think that goes to the manager at some point, because he has been preparing to have this kind of staff for a long time and has been scouting coaches for a long time, and it seems like he put together a pretty good group.
Johnny Cueto goes tonight for the Giants. Giants got the Phillies in town, and they are 44-25. That is the best record in Major League Baseball. They are 22-9 at home. They've won more games, again, than any other team in Major League Baseball. Who would have thought we'd been saying this? Gausman had another very good performance yesterday. Here's one of the reasons, you know, like, in Philadelphia, they don't want you to sing a song about how much you like your guy. Out here, they want to hear that a little bit. He was asked about Gausman winning the Cy Young, and Kapler, of course, to talk about his guy winning a Cy Young. He needs to get that Jacob DeGrom topic out of the way, and he does so very well.
Let's start with DeGrom, because he's an animal, and I have the utmost respect for him, and I've seen quite a bit of him and think he's fantastic. Our guy gets my vote, obviously, because you know I see the work day in and day out. I see the preparation, and I see the consistent performance and the ability to kind of put the rest of our team on his shoulders oftentimes. And so you know I think he's worthy of consideration, and you know obviously I'd be behind that 1,000%.
Him talking about being able to see the work that a guy puts in, that definitely matters and shades what you think about a player. And then when you see the success that they're having, you keep on the work that they put in stands out like a sore thumb to you right now. Did either of you guys read that article about Marcus Semien? It was in The Athletic.
Yeah.
When he was a free agent, like his contract with the A's had officially expired, he's in free agency. He called David Forst and said, I want to stay working out, and I would like to go in and use your batting cage. And David Forst has an awful lot of respect for the guy. He said, okay, you can go ahead and do that. And this is definitely a breach in standard. You don't technically play for us anymore. They made him sign a waiver in case he hurt himself, obviously, and indemnified themselves against any lawsuits or anything like that. And he went in, he worked hard. Real hard. Semien worked his fanny off during COVID and through some very personal, sad stories between he and his wife. And there's a reason why things went a little off the rails for all of us. For Semien, it was compounded by a weird walk year, his wife having a miscarriage. Like, there was a lot going on for Marcus Semien. He's in the cage. He's working out. He's setting it to different ballparks and forced, like, basically knows, like, what teams he's talking to. If he comes in and things on Fenway, he's just been talking to the Red Sox. Things in Rogers Center, he's talking to the Blue Jays. He's watching the guy put the work in, and they still don't sign him. What they offered him was like the, would you like the Bobby Bonilla? We'll pay you $1 million over the next 12 years, like rolling over. We'll give you a $20 million deal, but it's really 12, and then we'll just have it roll over. I mean, how can you watch a guy who's from here, kills it for you, is really, really good for you, loves it, is dedicated, works his fanny off, had a real personal issue, off tracking any man from any job in the world. That happened to Marcus Semien, and they still can't get a deal done for a guy like that. Like, That is so frustrating. It would be great to just talk about, well, you know, the A's are going to take on the Yankees. Why isn't Marcus Semien with them? Why is he not on that team?
You know the answer to that. And you have to look up the organizational chain for that. Because there is no benefit to David Forst or Billy Beane offering a contract structured that way. That comes from the top. Because the word would get out if that was a Beane-driven idea or a Forst-driven idea. Because that's how you lose any chance at even a moderately priced free agent. Never mind the big ticket items. That it was an insulting deal, you know, basically mandated from on top so that he would leave. I mean, that's the answer.
Marcus Semien has more home runs than Elvis Andrews has RBIs. Just saying.
Well, he's the leadoff hitter playing a new position on a team with a bunch of guys that rake. And
okay.
What I'm trying to get at is he's having the year that is a dream for him.
I mean,
because the A's foolishness or the management's foolishness on him basically sent him to the best place for him.
Yeah, well, he's...
That's all I'm saying.
But he's also having essentially the year he had the last full season of Major League Baseball, except a couple of his doubles have gone over the fence. Like, it's not... This is kind of what you almost can expect from a healthy, prepared Marcus Semien. So, yeah, it might so far look like his best year, but, you know, he's 30. That's about your best year a lot of times. So they... Let a guy working extraordinarily hard, going into one of his best years, healthy, walk away, yeah. And the guy that replaced him with has less RBIs than the other guy has homers. It stinks. And look, the A's are really good, so maybe they don't regret it. But
how much better would you be?
Exactly, and I'm sure there's some fans that would like to see Marcus Semien out there, you know, the fans that became attached to him. By the way, can I quickly, before the end of the segment, I don't want to skip out on the Gausman part of this. Because, look, on one hand, what Gabe Kapler did in that soundbite you played was elegantly say, yeah, the other guy's going to win it, but I like my guy too. On the other hand, Kevin Gausman is the only other person you can make a legitimate argument for.
He's the only other man in the room.
Yeah, because, yes, DeGrom's, you know, advanced metrics are at a level you can't imagine. But Gausman's got 3 extra starts, 20-something extra innings, and by the way, a 1.5 ERA and a whip of 0.77. So, you know, he's a close second, if not a real competitor for first.
Well, he's not a close second, but the other thing that Kapler did was basically get in line with his guy in case DeGrom starts to have arm problems, which he's been having.
Bingo.
I mean, as phenomenal as DeGrom's season is, would you bet your car on him finishing the season?
Not at all.
So he basically what Kapler did was, hey, if it turns out that DeGrom doesn't win, think about my guy.
Right. If availability becomes an issue for him and not my guy is worthy of it. And look, he is. DeGrom.
He didn't sell an inferior product.
No, and in fact, technically, Kevin Gausman is the National League ERA leader because DeGrom doesn't have the innings to qualify. Like, if you go to the leaderboard at Baseball Reference, Gausman is 1.
Yeah. The Cy Young wouldn't be decided on ERA.
Right, definitely look technicality, at all the other metrics. But you're right.
But I'm what just this pointing
is about,
out.
This is, no, I understand. This is about, yeah, I know it's DeGrom, but in case it isn't,
here's my guy.
I got an idea.
Yeah. And Gausman is first in ERA, second in WAR, second in WHIP on the leaderboards, which, again, don't have DeGrom because of, you know, qualification.
But DeGrom has one more homer, I believe.
DeGrom is a better hitter than Kevin Gausman. There's no debating that.
By the way, we got to talk about why you got to love Shohei Ohtani. There's just a lot of reasons to like him. There's another one that we'll tell you about before it's all said and done today. So stay with us. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
So to take this show wherever you go, you need to download the Odyssey app, your favorite 95.7 The Game, and boom, you can take us anywhere. Also, you've just been registered for a staycation at the Silverado and Spa and Resort and Spa up in Napa, a two-night stay, a round of golf on their PGA Tour course, and $250 food and beverage credit. You can check out all the details at 957thegame.com/contests. Speaking of golf courses and PGA golf courses, we are day two of the U.S. Open here, fellas. The top 60 players on the leaderboard after 36 holes are going to automatically make it through to the third round. That's how they determine the cut line in this major. The projected cut line right now is around plus two, I think, the last
three.
Time I said. Is it three at this point in time? Okay. 19 players were under par at noon on day two. 156 golfers originally in the field. The latest tee time today was around 2:45. So everybody is either done with round two or round two is underway. The entire field is out on the course or has already come home. 14 players are currently under par right now. So Phil Mickelson, by the way, is not one of them. Phil had a rough first round. He was plus four. And the Caesars Sportsbook and William Hill book right now have a seven-figure liability on Phil as a 50-to-1 long shot. And it's his home course for sure. But he had problems with cell phones distracting him yesterday. Like, first of all, when the U.S. Open was at Olympic Club, the amount of you didn't have your cell phone out on that course was like 100%. Yeah. I mean, you got patted down like you were trying to board a first-class Concorde airliner. You were not taking a cell. This is the fault of the U.S. Open. How do you have a bunch of douchebag fans in the gallery with their phones still on ring? Come like, on.
Comedians can get your cell phone out of your hands, but the U.S. Open can't?
I have a theory. Torrey Pines, you have a different kind of golf crowd.
Wow.
In that, I'm not giving you my cell phone.
Are you saying it's all the people who were running around Phil?
I'm
crowding up the fairway.
I'm saying that's part of it. I'm saying there's a greater likelihood of people who just don't want to be taking orders from anybody.
Orange County residences is what you're saying.
Okay. Orange County and San Diego County. I mean, I'm guessing there's some of that.
La Jolla.
And toward that end,
SOBs.
I mean, yeah, the PGA should have done something about it. But I get that would have led to a lot less acquiescence down there than up here.
Hey, look, Liberty Schmiberties, we're trying to play the U.S. Open over here. Golf etiquette trumps any law of the land during the U.S. Open, for goodness sakes.
And by the way, Phil Mickelson is at plus three at the moment. So
hey.
He's right on the cut line.
Hey, you know who's got hoping he gets to the weekend? NBC.
Yeah, damn right.
Oh, because he's the one thing they can bank on.
Every single sports book in Vegas wants Phil to run out of golf balls right now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I heard what the liability was across the city for that, I was surprised because at 50-to-1, well, I mean, you get somebody to take a flyer, but not to the extent that like the books were worried about it.
Nobody knows golf and he just won a major, right? So that's not just some golf bettors taking a flyer. That's every jamoke who's never bet golf in their life stepping up to the plate to say 50-to-1 for the guy who just won a major. What a deal.
Right. This is
what I'm saying is they set the line wrong, not that fans are bettors.
Well, but see, I think this is so okay. This to me feels like the rare case where a good book has the stones, has the temerity to set the line where it belongs based on his actual ability to win the tournament and put themselves in dangerous liability to win what ought to be a huge payday for the casino.
I think that's what they tried to do.
Yeah.
And I think
it's going to work.
Well, it is going to work, but I don't think they're in the business of trying to pick how the event's going to go. They don't want that kind of liability under any circumstances.
I see your point.
Because of the Leicester City story.
Well, they might not want the liability, but they want the handle. Here's the deal. Got a few whales in there throwing the kind of cash around to move a bet. Okay, got to worry about that. It feels like Phil Mickelson probably got $25 betted up to an eight-figure liability by the old lady who is now going back to the penny slots.
Oh, I'll bet on Phil. He's from San Diego.
But as it turned out, the handle is not appreciably bigger this year than it was last year or the year before. What it is anybody who bet it, bet Mickelson.
Right.
And I think that's where line adjustment pre-tournament could have saved them at least the threat of the liability.
Yeah. Also would have cost them a few bucks, but in the end they win the way you're talking about, undoubtedly.
Yeah. You know what also is going to prevent them from the liability? That Phil just won the major as the oldest human to ever do it, and he's even older now.
Yeah,
you don't get that record twice.
Probably not. It's a real long shot, folks. And that's it's going to be interesting to see how long the PGA Championship victory bump lasts for people betting Phil.
It's going to be over.
I think it's going to be over today.
Yeah.
It might be. But again, most of those bets, I think, come from people who don't really know what they're doing.
Well, they're just brand bettors, happy bettors. Just yeah. Wanted a little money and juice on the weekend.
Hey,
make
Phil,
it happen.
I've heard of him.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll tell you, the one thing that is, regrets in life, do you have any? My dad and I talked all about how one day we were going to get to a U.S. Open together on a Sunday. Like so many fathers and sons had these conversations. He passed away. It'll never happen. I'm going to get a little lump in my throat on Sunday watching a little U.S. Open, thinking about Ronnie. He would have loved it. My dad loved the U.S. Open.
But you're going to have Jack.
Yeah,
and now you guys can go do it.
Exactly.
And by the way,
you can make him a promise you have no chance of ever carrying through on.
Well, you got a real shot at it. Did you ever get to the tennis version, though? Because that's one I got to do with my grandpa, who was the biggest tennis fan in the world.
Let me ask you, did you get to the old Flushing or the new Arthur Ashe Stadium?
The old Flushing.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I remember that. I remember walking the concourse of the big tennis tournament. It was super cool as a little kid.
You see the world from the World's Fair?
Yeah. The Expo Ball. Yeah. Anyway, Flushing, good times.
Yeah. You guys had a different relationship with your parents than I did.
Well, that was my grandfather, but yeah, perhaps.
Well, no, he got a warm and fuzzy. I didn't get it.
Sorry. I'm sorry, everyone.
But it's normally the U.S. Open and Father's Day is a lovely thing. And if you get to enjoy a U.S. Open on Sunday, hanging out with your dad.
After you fail to find the Giants game on Peacock.
Right, because you just can't, the damn thing's not on. And you know what? Both the frickin' Sixers and the Jazz get eliminated tonight. So now there's not double game sevens. So now you're just in a puddle of misery with Ray Ratto. Upset that it's Father's Day. Anybody's having sports, not sports, just it all stinks.
I'm not sure what to do with my hands.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm getting the Father's Day I asked for.
Left alone?
Peace and
left
quiet.
Left alone.
Yeah.
Skating my wing, not bothering anybody.
I don't think I'm ever going to get that.
You've got kids, so mine are out of the house now.
Yeah, okay, maybe like 20 years down the road I can get that.
Jillian asked me what I want for Father's Day.
No, I just want to warn you.
I'm going
to
be dead? Who are we kidding?
No, you may not be dead, but they're not leaving until they're 30. They may leave when they're 20.
If I'm lucky.
But they're coming back at least a couple of times because this economy is not going to allow.
You're absolutely right.
So,
18 years. We're going to have brilliant children. We'll be paying off our mortgages by then.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, kids these days, he's going to invent something when he's like seven that mints the whole family.
There's only going to be five jobs left in America, so it won't matter what he invents.
It's the hopeful future that we keep on selling our own children, that's for sure.
I think you have a better chance selling your own children for your own hopeful future.
I did ask for one thing on Father's Day, and I'm getting it.
Huh?
Biscuits.
Oh.
There will be buttermilk biscuits on Father's Day.
Preferred biscuit delivery. Biscuits and gravy, just some butter,
it's gonna be
jam.
Biscuits with, she'll do the biscuits, and then I'll do the compound cinnamon honey butter.
Oh.
Yes.
So, but you still have to do some work on this.
Well, I insist on it because no one's compound butter is better than daddy's compound butter.
Mm, cinnamon honey butter sounds
fantastic. I know what I'm doing.
Sounds like you've got to teach somebody so that you don't have to do it, and you still get the quality you're after.
I would take the recipe if you're giving it away.
It's real simple.
Yeah, you have no chance
of that. Do you put cinnamon in the butter?
Cinnamon and honey. In the butter.
There it is.
And
I
then
think
you
I
know
can
what
pull
you do?
That off.
Secret.
Mix it.
A little salt.
Oh, yeah. Always a little salt.
A little salt in there. That's what you want.
We're
if you really
a lot
want,
on
if
today's
want,
show.
If you want to get goofy, a dash of nutmeg.
Oh,
but
my
now,
goodness.
Now you're getting crazy.
You sort of got a holiday honey butter at that point.
Now you're getting crazy. Let's just welcome everybody real early to their 4 o'clock hour so we can just get
gotta
the hell
interrupt this somehow.
Yeah, let's move on.